If you've been listening to the impeachment hearings recently, you may feel like you've had your fill of politics. But there is new research out that makes some interesting points about voting behavior, and it has implications right here in Hawaii. Political analyst Neil Milner joins us with more on that in today's edition of The Long View. And Neil, this work really explodes a pretty well-worn myth about supporters of President Trump, that they tend to be working class and financially challenged, and it turns out that's not the case at all.
Right. It's actually new research and new research about old research. Because not all that long after the 2016 presidential election, three political scientists did a study and of who voted for Trump and who didn't, those kinds of Trump voters things, and said, hey, you know what? This idea that it was the working class that was the basis of the Trump victory is simply not true. That 75% of Trump voters were basically white, and were not of working class background. So that in effect, from the get-go, there was much less of a working class base here, and there was evidence during the primaries that the Trump supporters were actually relatively well off, and we'll get to what that means in a second. So at that bit of research back in 2017, they said it's time that we got rid of this myth and took a better look and quit seeing it as this working class. These three people came back and did a more systematic study recently of Trump voters. And they did it in a very interesting sort of way. They said what we should look at is relative wealth and relative income compared to your neighborhood.
And where you live.
Where you live.
As opposed to some national scale.
That's right. Because the national scales will have a median income thing, but a $50,000 in a low cost of living area with relatively low housing prices, if there is such a thing anymore, is quite different than living on $50,000, say, here or anywhere else. So they did this statistical stuff with a very big sample, and they found out that that people who made above the median income in their area, so we're not talking about the 1% here. People who made above the median income in their area were more likely to vote for Trump than people that you would identify with the working class, making below median income, and the kinds of things that we assume are the working class. So if you just stop there and visualize what lots of people's perceptions are about the Trump voter, it's significantly different. And I think this attempt to do it in a relative sort of way makes a lot of sense because the country's made up of lots of different situations. To me, what it suggests is that the Trump voter, to put it in its simple terms, is much more like what we knew about the Tea Party activists in terms of they're being relatively well off than they are like the persons that you read about in Appalachia and so on.
And disaffected, angry.
Yeah. Now, we're not getting away from disaffection or anger or racism or propensity toward authoritarianism, all of which show up in other studies. But what they say is they're not tossing those aside, but what they're saying is you can't necessarily assume that those are working class issues that translated so heavily into Trump's victory. You have to look at other kinds of groups. And, you know, when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, and you start asking different sorts of questions. We knew from the get-go that the kind of working class areas in certain states that were supposedly Democratic states, that there were a group of voters in those states that voted Republican that we would, we being the public, would think they wouldn't normally vote Republican. You always have to keep in mind, and that's where the media focused all attention on these, the disaffected in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And you picture these guys, you know, with empty lunch pails and all of this sort of stuff. But if you think about the election as a whole, first of all, a heavy, heavy percentage of people who identified as Republicans voted for Trump. Mm-hmm. The overwhelming majority. So that was that certainly was another factor. Turnout among African Americans, and Wisconsin was a key example of this, dropped significantly from what it was in 2016 to what it had been in the Obama thing. So you have all these other factors, but somehow, partially because of the salience of these states, we kind of generalized from it and focused so much on what was the working class in our minds.
And it really sort of underlines the danger of creating mythology in an easily sort of almost visual way.
Oh, yeah.
The media tends to do.
Oh, I think the media, I think this is a narrative that was so compelling that the media took it on. Listen, the media at best gets, to me, a D plus in terms of the way it covered the 2016 election. And it wasn't just that. Well, we can do a whole show on that sometime. But this is a compelling story, and it was an important story. I'm not saying that the switchers and that group are unimportant. I'm not saying there isn't a lot of disaffection and all of that. But you can't jump from that. And this frankly drives me nuts when I sit around and talk to my liberal friends who I identify with in terms of my politics, and they keep circling back to these kind of rednecks who don't know what they're doing, and they can't imagine why people would think like this. So I tell them two things. One thing I tell them is that it's your imagination is just limited, you know. And the second thing I tell them is that, you know, there is research on this, on a related issue, that suggests that liberals have much more harder time even comprehending opposing arguments than conservatives do with opposing arguments. And so some of it is this kind of otherness, this idea that we tend to want to identify people who think differently from us as being different from us in other ways. And, you know, you can think about some worker up in northern Wisconsin who really was pretty much disaffected about politics in general. And that's fine, but you can also think about your older, whiter neighbor, someone you might work out with at a gym or that you work with, who's more like that. And again, it's not about rich people. Mm-hmm. This is not about rich people. This is just about people who are making a little bit more money than the folks in their neighborhoods.
That contextual wealth or the
Yeah, contextual wealth. Yes, that's yes. Right. Relatively, yeah. Relatively rich versus relatively poor. Yeah, contextual wealth.
So if you turn this a little bit looking forward rather than looking backward, when you look through this prism at 2020, what comes to your mind?
Well, I think the first thing you have to remember, and this is a mantra, the first thing you have to remember is this suggests what we know and what will continue, and that is the power of party identification. Mm. That is, you can make a pretty good bet right now that the overwhelming majority of Republicans are going to vote for Trump, and the overwhelming majority of Democrats are going to vote for anybody who's on the Democratic ticket. So you're talking about a smaller group of people. So big picture is, you want to understand that this is not all about this disaffected working class, because it turns out not to be true, and also because that doesn't explain the entire election. And when you look at the approval ratings for Trump by party, and when you look at the feelings about impeachment by party, you see it's an overwhelming, if 84% of the Republicans support Trump in approval rating or oppose impeachment, you have a pretty good sense of what 2020 is going to look like. I think another thing is that you see what the dilemma is for both political parties. That is, try to figure out how to deal with this disaffection. So we always assume that Trump is, which I think he is a demagogue. But it's not necessary that his demagoguery is appealing to kind of ignorant poor people. That doesn't seem to be supportive of it. So I think that the Democrats are going to have trouble finding their footing because they don't know quite exactly how to manage this. But I think ultimately you always have to think about the stability factors in these kinds of campaigns. For sure, the Democrats are going to spend more time in the states that they blew last time. I mean, the fact that the National Democratic Convention is in Milwaukee, it's not because there's so many Milwaukee Brewer fans. and I must say, as an ex-Milwaukeean, it's a great city in the summer, but that ain't why it's there.
Right.
So, but I think that these kinds of misunderstandings reflect a lot about how we think about ourselves.
Beware political mythology.
Yes.
Thanks, Neil. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Neil Milner, retired professor of political science, who joins us with his regular column, The Long View.